I already feel bad for my kids, but yeah, I'm totally gonna torment them their whole lives. Like, I don't understand, like, why parents wouldn't. Like, that's like the only reason to have kids in my mind is, how bad can I screw them up, and how much can I make them suffer?
Welcome to another episode of Jabber and the Drone, the movie review podcast that politely disagrees to agree. You are Richard Wally.
And you are Cassidy Robinson.
And
I'm glad we didn't say where we're from. I'm sick of that. I don't want to be.
You're done with that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm from the planet Earth, man. I represent everyone.
From the USA.
Yes.
All right. On this episode, we are going to be talking about Muppets Most Wanted and the movie Concussion in our Netflix homework. But before we get into all of that, what's new with you? What's your big news? You're going to a comic book convention next week, aren't you?
I am. I'm going to Emerald City, the comic book convention in Seattle. It's a pretty big one.
Oh, so you're actually traveling. I thought it was the Rose City Comic Con over in Portland.
No, that's August, yeah. I'm going up to Seattle for a couple days and,
we'll doing be going it up. Up
there. Yeah, going there Thursday, just hanging out with some friends, doing the Oni. There's like an Oni party. Oni is a small comic book
publisher company.
Yeah. And yeah, so just doing that kind of stuff. I don't know. I have no idea, really. I have some friends that are going down there, and they're just going to take me, and I'm going to be like, oh, okay, cool.
This is the first time you've really been to Seattle since you've moved to Portland like 2.5 years ago.
Yeah, we've always meant to. We just never. Like, I mean, it's kind of weird because, like, so Pocatello, you always have to go somewhere to do stuff.
Yeah, Pocatello, Idaho, where we're originally from.
Yeah. And here it's different because you're somewhere and there's just stuff that we want to do around here all the time. So it's just like, I don't know, yeah. I guess. Like, people are like, well, Seattle's so much bigger, blah, 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 and cool. And I'm like, okay, cool.
Yeah. I don't know. In my imagination, I've never been to Seattle, but to me, Portland and Seattle are kind of like yin and yang. They're kind of the same, cut from the same cloth. Like, mm-hmm. I think if you live in one, you don't necessarily have to go to the other very often. Unless you're just really into certain landmarks.
Well, what's funny is Portland kind of has almost like a, like, inferiority complex, like it seems to me, to like Seattle. Uh-huh. And like, they're so much bigger and better than us. And it's like, no, not really. Like, I'd rather come from the butthole city, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, but that could all change. Maybe you'll go and you'll see what everyone's clamoring about.
Yeah, probably. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I'm excited. I've always wanted to go to the, we are planning to do this eventually, the music and pop culture museum that they have there.
Uh-huh.
They have, like, sci-fi, like, relics and stuff like that, so.
Yeah. Well, that'll be cool. And next week, you're not going to be on the episode, but we do have a guest lined up. Just out of superstition, I'm not going to name names, but, it should be pretty exciting.
Is it Batman?
It is Batman.
Just out of superstition?
You got me. Yeah.
Because you're cowardly and superstitious.
Yeah, I got you.
The podcast community.
This is the, first day of my, spring break, or tomorrow will be.
That's exciting for you.
Vaguely. No. I don't know if I'm doing anything. In fact, I'm pretty sure I'm not. But if I was smart, I would start research or writing on one of these gigantic-ass papers I have to have done by the end of the semester. But we'll see if that happens.
How many do you have?
3. But they're like 15 to 30 pages each.
15's not bad. 30 is...
30's rough.
That's rough, yeah.
Yeah, specifically that class. It's our world cinema class. Our original professor had to give the class over to somebody else after his, like, the fourth week, because he, like, was having surgery and wouldn't be able to drive for a while.
No.
So we've been trying to, like, get this new guy who got this class thrown into his lap. We've been trying to get him to, like, shorten the paper length.
Mm-hmm.
We're like, so how about that paper? And he keeps alluding, like, every time we ask him, he's like, oh, yeah, I'm going to look at that again. And yeah, so anyway, so we haven't got a clear answer on whether or not that's going to happen. So yeah, that's my immediate plans. Maybe I'll drive over to UCLA. I think for one of my classes, I have to do primary research on film, meaning, you know, not stuff that people's already written. So mm-hmm. I'm thinking for my primary research, we're given access to everything in the archives at UCLA. And I'm thinking of looking up directors, famous directors who went there, and watching their student films and writing on that.
That would be cool. I think you should do that.
Yeah. I just don't know what to write. I don't have a preset argument, so I don't know if that's necessarily the best way to go. I might end up there all day watching movies and going, well, that's cool.
It could be, you could, I don't know, this is maybe a little divisive, but you could be kind of like trying to recognize auteur and auteur, you know, something
off. Yeah. I mean, that kind of writes itself into it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So this is boring. Let's go ahead and talk about the news.
Yeah, that was really boring. I don't give a shit about our life.
Sorry, listeners. What do you have?
What do I have? I have, did you know that Sofia Coppola lady is looking to direct Universal's Little Mermaid movie?
I did hear about that.
I think that there's more to go from. I think everybody goes straight to the Disney, but I think it's Hans Christian Andersen is the original writer, or one of those.
Little Mermaid? Probably? Yeah. I don't know. It's one of those. Yeah, the story's pretty old. It's pretty, it's been retold a lot. Like, Ponyo, the Miyazaki film, is a adaptation of Little Mermaid.
Oh, I didn't know that. No, it could be. I mean, so there could be a lot of room for her to wiggle. And honestly, I think that Sofia Coppola, with this kind of material, that's very interesting for her to go there.
Huh.
Especially after some of the stuff she's done recently.
Yeah. Well, it kind of fits with her whole interest in young, privileged women who are kind of locked in societies that they, you know, that they're trying to get out of.
Yeah. And I always wonder with somebody who's been so subdued as her, is what she's going to do with the visuals, because somebody like a Del Toro or something like that, or Gilliam or something like that, you're automatically going to be like, oh yeah, he's going to do a Del Toro or Gilliam film. But with her, it's like, okay, is she going to do a super realistic? Is she going to try something out of her wheelhouse? What is she going to do? So,
yeah. Yeah, I was a big fan of The Bling Ring, which is a little bit of a departure for her. I mean, I think we'll see, you know, I imagine it's going to be pretty ornate and kind of melancholy and, you know, Sofia Coppola-y, but you never know.
Yeah, well, you always, I don't know, I guess, I haven't even seen the film and I really need to, but I always kind of go back to the old, the Beauty and the Beast, the black and white one,
the Bella La Bette.
Yeah.
The John Cocteau version?
Yeah. Well, yeah. I know it's something that's influenced a lot of different authors, and so I just, that's pretentious. Sure. A lot of directing people of the directing influence. I feel better about that.
Oh, so kind of, I don't know, sort of in the same area of interest. Producer Jason Blum is going to be putting a live-action Gem and the Holograms movie on the screen, to be directed by Step Up 3's John M. Chu. So that's pretty much the best thing ever.
Yeah, I barely remember Gem and the Holograms, to be honest. It was one of those shows that when I was young, like, I had like a reaction to. I was like, no. I will not watch this. And I didn't even ever really watch it. So I don't know much about it other than it was really colorful. And
very much so. Oh, well, the whole thing's on Netflix now.
Oh, I guess I could, you know, take a look.
You could dip into that. I watched the first episode.
Oh, okay.
After this news was announced. I don't know if I ever did watch it. It was a little before our time. But I know I'm sure it was syndicated.
Sure.
But again, I probably didn't watch it, but I knew what it was. I remember it existing.
Well, see, I was talking with this with somebody, but honestly, for me, some of these things, I know Gem and the Holograms was around when I was a kid, but I purposely boycotted it as a child. Because I was talking about how I would never dipped into Power Rangers because I felt people were trying to replace the Ninja Turtles. And I as a 6-year-old kid, I was like, no, this is bullshit. You bring me back the Ninja Turtles. And then I remember having fights, sometimes physical altercations in school over it. So,
well, anyway, so I looked at the first episode and it's a really bizarre show. Mm-hmm. The whole premise basically is, so MTV's really big right now. How do we try and shoehorn that into Saturday morning kids cartoon? We're trying to brand MTV as an aesthetic for this bizarre television show about a band that also kind of solves mysteries and also has weird sci-fi powers. There's a hologram machine that gives them their gear and everything. So
that goes back to the kind of the,
but they even cut to music videos in the show. They'll be in the middle of whatever, and then they'll break dialogue and they'll have at the bottom, they'll have the name of the song and what band is singing it, like it's MTV. It was totally trying to be MTV for little kids.
Sure.
It's kind of adorable.
I see what you're saying, but it kind of has a tradition with Hanna-Barbera and some of their kind of the Josie and the Pussycats, all those kind of things.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, totally.
A freaking band traveling around with a giant shark and a dune buggy.
Yeah.
Can the dune buggy talk as well or something weird like that?
I don't remember. Jabberjaw, yeah. Yeah. But so John M. Chu did the Step Up movies, or Step Up 2 and 3, specifically, mm-hmm. the best ones. And I can't think of a better pairing of director and material. This is exactly what he should be doing. And I can't decide in my head whether I want it to be kind of more like Josie and the Pussycats or more the Brady Bunch movie, where they bring attention to its absurdness and make it a comedy, or if they play it straight and let it just be totally bug nuts. I think either way is going to be great. My only thing is I really hope he keeps it a period film. I really hope that it takes place in 1987.
Yeah, no, I talked about this.
I don't want it to go all modern and rap and stuff. I want it to be Gem and Holograms.
You don't want, see, I'm always, when it comes to things like this, I'm like, what if there's time travel? What if there's a lot of things?
Well, because if they did the Brady Bunch way, they could, Gem and the Holograms could be from 1987 or whatever, basically, their world and their aesthetic, and then plop it in the middle of 2014 and make it a fish out of water thing. That could be fun.
Huh.
Yeah, anyway.
I have no idea.
I'm down. That's all I needed to say.
No, I think it's an interesting premise, but to me, I guess it doesn't really pique my interest much more than
bare curiosity. Bare
mostly, yeah. Kind of, yeah, almost a morbid curiosity. So they finally decided they're coming back from the break after Paul Walker's death. Mm-hmm. And so what they've decided is they're actually going to use CG and body doubles to replace Paul Walker. Huh. And now I know that this was supposed to be a 2-part film, so I'm going to assume they're only going to do this in one film. But what if they decided to do this in 2 films?
What do you mean? Like continue with CG Paul Walker throughout the rest of the series?
Well, I
think they're going to try and get away with it once. Because they have some stuff already that they can use.
I think they should, and that's the Sage version. And I don't think that they would. I think they'll have some kind of cop-out for him to not be in the next one, mm-hmm. which is the good choice. But I guess that brings up the question of if they could in another film, should they? Like, I mean, again, I think it's a bad idea, and I don't even know if I'm really okay with it for, I don't know. There's something that's very strange about that to me. There's something unnatural in the CGI, even for just like Fast and the Furious 7, to me seems a little kind of not completely, I don't know. Just seems not okay.
Yeah, the fact that they're, well, I mean, that's like a Brandon Lee thing, right? Like with the crow when he died halfway through. So they had to get a body double to kind of pick up shots. I think they had the majority of the dialogue scenes done with him, but they had to like kind of patch it together. And it's fairly seamless. I don't really, see it. But and this, I think they'd done some amount of shooting with him already. So he's already in the movie as far as like the script and everything without doing dramatic rewrites, and really reworking the entire thing and the footage they already have. They would really have to, it might be actually be an easier solution to do body doubles, a few CGI things, and maybe some minimal rewrites, just to kind of get the movie on its feet again.
Well,
It might not be a totally mercenary idea.
it might not be, and I don't think it is. Like, I think that
It would be if he was in
honestly,
the next one.
it would
That
be
would just be
completely.
redundant.
Well, yeah, and it would be a bad move. It would be kind of in poor taste as well, and all that jazz. However, I don't know. There's just still something, like the body doubles doesn't bother me. The CG for some reason, I don't know. Maybe I'm just being weird about it, but. It's just the it's I guess it's the replacement, like it just doesn't, there's something about that that just bothers me, and I'm not sure what it is completely. I feel like I'm not really, I'm being a little vague, but I don't really have a full like gut reaction to it or a thought out reaction. It's just like, ew, CG Paul Walker,
Yeah,
like
well, they could just look bad for one.
yeah.
I don't know. We'll see. I mean,
Yeah, it's kind of like it's almost uninteresting. It is, but at the same time, I'm
I mean,
like.
I don't know. I think, it could affect the movie in a bad way, and I don't mean because of poor taste things. It could just look bad, or, the rewrites or whatever they're going to try and work around could hobble the movie. I'm a little bit more concerned about that than I am the moral implications.
And it's not, I don't, I think, I mean, that's definitely part of it for me. And it's, I don't know if it's more like, as like, oh, is this playing God or something like that? It's just more like, it's just more like, it's just kind of just like, I don't know. There's something weird about it to me. It depends. Well, I mean, it comes down to seeing the film, like you said, but.
What if he got in like a terrible car accident? Like, I mean, not the one that actually killed him in real life, but one in the movie, and he had to get facial reconstruction surgery, and they just cast a different person. Like Armie Hammer or something walks out, and he's like, "I look a little different now, guys."
That's, I guess maybe that's my same reaction. I would kind, I don't know. Maybe I'm a bad person, but I think I'd prefer that.
I would too, because that'd just be fucking crazy.
Yeah, that would be a bold take on it.
Yeah, like full on Bewitched Darren
Yeah, not even,
switcheroo.
maybe barely address it even and just keep going.
All right,
I mean, and it's.
my last story that I have here is MST3K, otherwise known as Mystery Science Theater 3000, the famous program from the 90s where they'd show old B movies and riff on it while they were watching it. Two little robot puppets. They just announced that the show could be sort of coming back. Not the show proper, but the people involved who are now doing a downloadable version in commentaries called Riff Tracks. I guess there was like two camps. There's like two of the people went and did Riff Tracks. The other two went and did something else similar. And now Riff Tracks is getting a show on the National Geographic channel. And they're already set up for 3 episodes to come up soon.
Is that weird? Okay, so everything else I'm, like, down for, but is it weird that it's on the National Geographic Channel to you at all?
Yes and no. I mean, if you think about the degradation of culture and TV in America, it was originally, was it originally Sci-Fi Network, or was it even something before that?
It's probably something before that.
I think it was, like, yeah, like TBS or something before that.
Because I think you ended up with reruns on Sci-Fi. I don't even think it was new episodes. Yeah, Sci-Fi
Network showed the old episodes. So it might have been TNT. I don't even totally remember. But, so, yeah, and then Sci-Fi Network is now SIFI, and they're showing, like, wrestling and stuff that has nothing to do with that. So, of course, like...
Are they really showing wrestling on SIFI?
They have been for a while, actually, even before it was SIFI. But, you know, like, it seems like now whatever channel was originally their, like, mission statement is changed completely.
Right.
It just really doesn't matter anymore.
Well, it's just, I don't know.
The National Geographic Channel is also showing that, Mountain Man gold mining TV series.
Right.
Like, narrative show.
Well, that at least... There's some kind of tie to it.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. If they did have some kind of, like, I mean, loose tie. I guess there has been too much degradation. It doesn't even matter. I'm sure that... I think that National Geographic... Yeah. It might not be on that channel, but I know they do things like Pawn Wars or whatever. And I might have just combined two shows.
Whatever. But you did a little, but it's okay.
Those one of those reality hang-bang whatever things that they do.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I just... To me, it's weird when they do that. Like, even with the sci-fi, I think if they're going to show wrestling, they need to make it sci-fi.
Like sci-fi wrestling?
Yeah, I think that they should do it, like on a mock-up spaceship kind of thing. Yeah. And have aliens
cyborgs
instead of...
and...
Yeah, that would be...
I'd maybe actually watch that.
Yeah, right?
So, are you excited for the return of a televised version, something like Mystery Science Theater 3000?
I liked the original one. And I mean, part of it was because I got to watch, like, old sci-fi movies, and then they were funny.
Yeah.
Because they made fun of it. And because it had talking about random sci-fi backgrounds, you know?
Yeah.
It was like a robot, and you'd have these weird, like it's almost like a horror host kind of beginnings and ends and, like,
yeah, they have little skits and stuff they do in between, like, commercial breaks, and they really did it up. Really, you know, curated these films.
Yeah, it was
and really exposed them to a whole generation. Like, you know, there's a whole generation never would have seen Mono Sands, Afade, or Gamera, or you know, any of these old B movies from the 50s and 60s, or even like later. Like, my favorite episode, or one of my favorite episodes, was an 80s movie called Hobgoblins, which was like a Gremlins knockoff.
Yeah, I saw
that one was really funny. But do you think that, like, in this day and age where we are... we are so kind of in the riff track, like, mindset already, like, everyone, we're living in, like, postmodernism, post-irony now, where everyone, like, it's not, I don't know if the, what, do you think that there's still, like, an audience that doesn't already kind of have this in their, you know what I mean? Like, back in the 90s, when you watch Mystery Science Theater 3000, nobody was watching these movies, nobody had heard of these movies, nobody really thought of making fun of films in, like, that kind of way and making
so
a presentation.
So your specific question is more along the lines of...
Is it still relevant?
Is it still relevant? Yeah, it's... Well, as long as they're funny, and they're funnier than people think they are in the theaters, then yeah.
Okay.
Because most of the time, people are just assholes in the theater. The difference between these people and somebody in the theater is they're funny. It's part of a TV program. And, I mean, you're specifically going for that reason. I mean, some films, it's just hard not to. Like,
yeah,
you guys were talking about... when I was gone, you guys did I, Frankenstein. I'm sure that film was hard as hell not to just be like, oh, shoot me. You know, and
we
just,
were shushed.
You know, well, that's probably good. Like, I mean, I'm glad it happened to you. That's funny to me.
Yeah, but... I know, because I'm so not that guy. But yeah, well, that movie was that was rough. Well, stuff.
It comes back to when we like watched the
Timeline.
Timeline. Yeah, I was gonna say I was, like Time Bandits, Time Machine, Time. Yeah, Timeline. That was a horrible movie, and we probably should have been shushed or kicked out of the theater. A lot of things, but I don't remember a better time than sitting there and making fun of that.
Yeah.
Horrible, horrible piece of crap.
And it'd be fun because Riff Tracks, you know, they don't just do old B movies. They do commentaries so you can download for currently released films too, if they think they're riff worthy. So it'd be fun. I don't know, maybe a little expensive on their part, but it'd be fun if we got to see stuff like that too.
Well, it would be nice to see
like Frankenstein or Resident Evil 6 or whatever.
Well, they can also, I mean, with it not being, they don't have to be so like divisive in being like, oh, this is Mystery Science Theater 3000, so it has to be an old like science fiction B movie or something like that, or horror. It doesn't have to be so specific.
Mm-hmm.
It can be very. They can break the mold. They could even do a film that's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's even films that are great that you can make fun of, like, to no end.
Yeah, I mean, if you're in the right mood and with the right people, and you know, in the right mental capacity, then you can anything.
Even drunk.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And anything can be riff-worthy, as long as everybody is cool with that.
Fair enough.
All right, well...
It just shouldn't be done in theaters, kids.
Yeah.
That's the line.
Unless you're the only one there.
Agreed. Or it's Hecklevision, and you're supposed to.
Yeah, if that's part of the event or whatever. All right, well, the pet topic that I wanted to discuss. You were sort of making fun of me earlier about a post that I put on Facebook.
Okay.
About comment sections.
Sure.
I am interested in the idea of the social media aspect, the social media thing, because I feel like there's two internets. There's pre-social media and post-social media.
Okay.
And you could to some extent say pre cable internet post, but I think really social media is a bigger change. And it seems like every single website you go to, even a lot of these movie sites that we refer to our news, all of like political websites or news sites like Huffington Post, or like Gawker and any of those kind of sites are loaded up with social media options. So now when you leave a comment, it's not just a comment, an anonymous comment. It links up with your Facebook or your Twitter or whatever. And so now, like, this is kind of weird, but, you know, Google Plus bought out YouTube.
Sure.
So when you leave comments on YouTube now, it goes on your wall on Google Plus, which I don't use.
Sure.
So then all of a sudden I start getting these replies to a comment I left months ago, and I don't even remember what the video was. And I'm just wondering, I guess where my question is going is this healthy? Is this a good thing? Should people have this immediate access to their opinions to be published in that kind of way everywhere and on everything?
Sometimes I want to say no to you, not to you personally, yes, to you personally as well, but
yeah.
In this context, I want to say no to it. But at the same time, I don't know, I'm half and half. Of course, the trolls, haters, whatever you want to call them, or just general stupid people who comment on things shouldn't. And it's not a place like always like certain opinions are valid or anything. And and the other thing is sometimes, I don't know, maybe even people overstep their bounds by oversharing or, and some people are like, no, I should be able to say whatever I want. That's fine. But there are hide buttons. There are ignore buttons. There are a lot of different things. So I don't know. I think that we have to work that out. I don't think that we have like a really good answer for some of the things. and for some of those kind of questions when it comes to social media, but there is kind of like an inundation of extra opinions that aren't really valid or really meaningful on those most of the time, including if I wanted to post on some of those, like, I don't really think that it's really that necessary, or really it wouldn't be that valid. So
it just adds to the noise.
Yeah.
But that's what I'm wondering, is I feel like there's so much noise now from not the creators, but the commenters, that the commenters are taking over the internet. And now I feel like the quality of content is compromised, and I don't mean the actual making of the content, like, you know, a good video or a good piece of writing or whatever, can still go up. And it can still be just as good as if there was no such thing as commenters. But I feel like it's no matter what you put out there, you're always up against the court of opinion.
Right.
And I just don't know if every single thing out there needs that same treatment.
Well, I think one of the ways, too, is what I've been seeing in some places is, like, literally, instead of being, like, an automatic everybody can comment, like, I understand, like, some places, like, for if they ask an opinion or whatever, you can't do this. But in some places, like, have an approved comment section or an approved, or, like, what's interesting? Who do we want to comment on this? What are we trying to get out of it? Like, sometimes I think it's almost just, like, sometimes, too, I've read comment sections where it just, like, nothing happens, and I'm like, I don't even know why this exists. Like, really?
What do you mean?
Well, people just get off on, like, it's like on the podcast. Like, see, what's different on the podcast, we get off on a random tangent. It's like a few seconds. Whereas, like, when people get off on random tangents, there's so much, like, chatter and stuff like that. Like, the original topic ends up changing. And, it ends up not even being.
Yeah, people start to have conversations, or they start to fight with each other about some little thing that they mention in an original comment, or
there is some entertainment in that, though. I think I've mentioned this to you before, but one of my favorite things I have found in a comment section is after the new Star Trek film Into Darkness came out, I literally saw two people who ended up fighting in Kleon, and I'm not fucking kidding, like, on a comment section, because one of them liked the new movie and one didn't. And then it started out as, well, I'm a bigger fan than you. Well, I'm a bigger fan than you. But then it divulged into this, and it was just maybe one of the most nerdy and ridiculous things I have ever seen. And I just wanted to like it all. This is what's wrong with social media sometimes. But, I don't know. I have a back and forth with it, because at the same time I did, because on that comment itself that you posted on Facebook, I don't know, I'll refer to it this way, a sister podcast, or a podcast that we really enjoy, the Dampercast. The host of that, Leland,
been on the show before. Yeah.
Been on the show before. He made fun of you, and I really enjoyed.
Yeah. He said that I was an old man.
You were an old man. And you are.
And I am. And I get that. I, you know, gladly will state that I am out of touch with my generation sometimes. I'm very much participating in all of that stuff. And I leave comments all over the place. So I'm, like, you know, totally a hypocrite. But I don't know. It's just, like, there's some news stories I read. It's just news, you know. It's not even like, you know, a place where public forum really has a place. It's just saying, like, oh, so-and-so passed this bill here, or so-and-so has, you know, died, or whatever. And then all of a sudden, there's just, like, the court of public opinion has to chime in. And I just wonder, is that always necessary for things like that?
I think sometimes it's not, but it always, the reason it's not going to go away, though, is just, it comes down to financial. It just, even if it's bad, it kind of goes along with, even bad press is good press.
Yeah.
Because if you get one person to like it, their whole friend group sees it. Mm-hmm. So if the next one, you get a few more people. So, I mean, it's the same thing. That's why sites and stuff like it. They want that kind of, it makes sense to me why it's around for in that sense, but is it always necessary? No. Do I always read it? Hell no. And once in a while for a laugh, or if I'm trying to just kind of like see what people are saying.
Yeah.
It's also always fun. I don't know. Sometimes there is like a weird comedy to it to me though.
Oh
Like,
yeah. Have you ever been to the Tumblr? What is it called? It's a Pornhub comments on stockphotos.tumblr.com.
okay.
They just find like these regular photos of like, like the type of stuff that'd be in a picture frame at Walmart. Of
Sure.
like a family hanging out or somebody like looking intently into their computer or whatever. And then they take actual comments that are on Pornhub videos, which is bizarre to me that there's even a comment section. And then they just like put the text over the picture. And it's some of the funniest stuff. That's a good way to waste an hour or two.
Maybe I'll look into it. I was reading something and these and it was like it was an open forum. It was one of the big ones, but they were actually kind of having this like semi like philosophical debate.
Yeah.
And then in the middle of it, there was just some like probably 12-year-old kid that just all it said was gay. And then I was just like, oh my gosh. Like to me there's something about it that was just the timing was right, and there was something about it. And I was just like what? Why is it even okay?
Is actually kind of great. Never mind, I changed my mind. Maybe I'll leave a little of this in. All right, so we're going to be talking about Muppets Most Wanted. Do you want to introduce that for us?
Yeah, of course I will. So basically, Muppets Most Wanted, the Muppets go on this big world tour, and they end up just in this big jewel heist, Mamba Jamma. Kermit ends up in prison while his lookalikes running around on the muck, robbing stuff with Ricky Gervais. You also what we get is like Ty Burrell is following and like as this like
Interpol agent.
Interpol, yeah, that was it.
Yeah.
Interpol agent with Sam the Hawk as a CIA agent, and you got Tina Fey in the Gulag, who's this prison guard, and like
Falling in
Danny
love with
Trejo is
Kermit.
there,
Yeah.
and who's the other one? There's the guy from Goodfellas in there as well, and Jemaine Clement, the guy from Flight of the Conchords. So
Yeah.
but honestly, like just a preface, because we already did this review, and so this feels really wooden and weird. But I felt like I needed to be meta about this, because this was a Muppets movie, so meta is the game. So in my review yesterday, one of the big things that really like resonated to me when I was talking about it was the humor in it. I did think was funny. Yesterday, I have to mention again, Danny Trejo, his cameo in this is probably one of the better cameos in all of them. Like,
It's actually pretty minor, though. He's sort of just there in the background for a lot of it.
it is,
Like,
but he's
barely up
such
there,
a
but
great background, and just seeing him sing and dance is just,
it's
it
pretty.
just brings tears to my eyes of joy.
Yeah.
Somebody like him just in that situation, it's just it would to me the prison scenes were some of the best, and they were also I don't know, there was something very there was something just great and kind of this was a part of the movie that I thought was kind of really smart and really good.
Yeah.
It was a little messy, and what I thought was a big problem was the fact that the humor was a lot like the humor from the first movie, except it was turned up to 11.
Yeah.
And that really made it kind of just sent the movie into a trajectory that was just kind of just it was too much and kind of grating. And I mean,
Okay.
it was funny, and it was a good, it was good enough for a Muppets movie, but I think they could have turned it down and kind of maybe turned up some of the emotional parts a little bit better.
Okay.
There were more Muppets in this one, though.
There were. And that's kind of what I wanted to talk about, is as I said in yesterday's review that was not recorded properly, there's in a lot of ways I think that the first Muppets reboot, which came out a couple years ago and was written by Jason Segel and he starred in it with Amy Adams, the co-writer Nick Stoller is still here and he did this one and it's still directed by James Bobbin, who did the first one as well. So there's a lot of carryover from that one. And they are pretty kind of companion pieces in a way. But in a lot of ways, I feel like the first one, I think the songs were a lot more memorable.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the first one is funnier in general. The jokes land a lot better. And there's a lot more, more attempts at kind of bridging the adult audience with the new kid audience that they're trying to reel in. And I think that the movie as a whole, as a story, kind of flows a little better. This movie, I think, feels a little labored sometimes. There's a lot of subplots going on all at once, and it kind of has to cut back and forth between kind of three or four different events, whether it's the Tyburrell, Samla, Eagle stuff where they're, you know, like, cops trying to do this investigation, whether it's the stuff with Ricky Gervais and Constantine, the Kermit lookalike, who's, I believe, voiced by Steve Carell.
No, he's not.
He's not?
No, it's by Matt Vogel, who does a bunch of the other ones as well.
Oh, he sounds just like Steve Carell doing a Russian accent. For some reason in my head, I always thought it was. Anyway... and then the Miss Piggy subplot, and, you know, there's a lot of different stuff going on. And I feel like sometimes the movie gets a little muddled trying to jump back and forth and tie all these loose ends together. And by the time you get to the third act, it feels a little like it just needs to get to the point already. And the songs aren't as memorable. There's a lot... I think there's actually probably more songs in this one than there was in the last
one. Well, that's actually what I wanted to kind of, when you were talking, this is something I didn't bring up yesterday, and I really do feel is that there are too many songs, and that's maybe part of the problem, is they get too much into that mode.
It sometimes they feel like digressions, yeah. Yeah.
Well, we talked about this as well yesterday, and I do think this is part of it still, is, I thought that there was this strange, like, I mean, it's a Muppets thing to do. It's very meta. The last few movies have been super meta anyway. But specifically, it seemed like there was this weird subtext about, like... And yes, we're talking about a Muppet movie and subtext.
Uh-huh.
There was this weird thing about, like, not, like, rushing things and, like, trying to... I mean, it was even kind of part of the integral part of the story with this world tour. It was, like, everybody wanted to do what they wanted to do instead of just trying to make this, like, good show. And... Like, yeah. So
Kermit, like, at the beginning of the movie actually says out loud, "We have to stick to our strengths, guys, or we might not be able to do another one of these."
Yeah.
And it's kind of obviously self-referential to the kind of lightning in a bottle success of the last movie.
Yeah, and honestly, you said yesterday, you said something about you could hear like almost like a frustration from some of them. Like a vocal frustration in the movie because like the characters literally like say things about it. Like in the very first song, which is outside of the movie, is almost a song about doing a sequel and how sequels aren't as good. And
yeah,
they said another line that I really enjoyed, but like it's weird because this movie is like kind of like is it's not as good, but there are like some benefits to this movie.
Yeah, well, that's what I wanted to get to, is that, you know, despite all of the things that the first Muppets, or I shouldn't say the first, but the last Muppets movie did correctly, and maybe did better, as far as just being an overall watchable movie, I actually think that Muppets Most Wanted feels more like a traditional Muppets movie. And I think that it's a little bit more true of a Muppets movie, because it's not doing so much heavy lifting on the, we got to get people caught up on the Muppets.
Mm-hmm.
And there's actually a lot, the Muppet characters are kind of more important to the plot this time around. Because last time it was, you know, Amy Adams and Jason Segel were taking up a lot of screen time. And then this new Muppet character that they invented just to, catch everybody up, who does return Walter. And I like that character, and I'm glad that he's part of the Muppets crew now. But this one, it feels like all of the Muppet characters are more the main characters. They have more stake in the plot. There is a lot of plot going on, but it gives more Muppets more to do throughout the whole picture. And even though some of that stuff didn't land, or some of the humor was maybe a little too obvious, or it was being really self-referential and all of that kind of stuff, by the time I got out of the movie, I was like, you know what? That feels a lot more like something that could have come out in 1984.
Yeah.
And in a way, I sort of enjoyed that.
And honestly, it was still a good time. I can obviously, I honestly can say it's not as good, but yeah, there's more Muppet moments. There's some fun humor in this. There is, also we talked about the cameos and how they were a little bit more naturalistic in this one.
Yeah, they were integrated as characters rather than stars playing themselves just to say, hey, I'll be in a Muppet movie. I mean, there's a tiny little bit of that, but most of the cameos, the big ones, like Ty Burrell and
Ricky Gervais and Tina Fey.
All of them, they're playing characters in the plot.
Well, even like some of the little ones, like Stanley Tucci plays this like guard that shoots at Kermit in the prison.
Tom Hiddleston shows up for 5 seconds in a really fun scene.
That one was really good, too.
Yeah.
The only one that plays himself still is Danny Trejo, which I'm sorry. That was my favorite cameo in the movie. I thought it was funny as hell. Comic gold.
Yeah.
Overall, I do recommend to people, especially if you just like the Muppets. I mean, I guess if you don't like that kind of stuff, it is turned up to 11. So you'll just be like, ugh, and just want to, like, put your finger in your throat or something.
Yeah.
But no, I think all in all, it was kind of a fun time. Is there anything we're leaving out?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I pretty much agree. I think it's a, I don't know. In a weird way, I kind of prefer this one to last. Even though the last one I think is funnier and better at being a movie in some regards, I think this one, it just feels more like a continuation of where they left off before they had to, you know, postmodernize Muppets.
Well, the other thing that they did that, there's usually moments, like in the last Muppet movie, there was never a time I was creeped out.
Yeah.
And in this one, we kind of talked about this last time as well. I was creeped out. I didn't like the little babies that helped Ricky Gervais rob the royal crown or jewels or whatever.
Yeah, that was just a weird moment. It didn't need to be. That's kind of by the point in the movie when it was just kind of like more.
I just thought they were creepy.
I just didn't get it. I didn't understand what if it was a joke. I didn't get the joke. If it was trying to be creepy, they looked like Garbage Pail Kids, kind of. I don't know. It was bizarre.
Yeah. Well, then there's another moment that we talked about the Muppets doing unnatural things. Some of the CGI stuff I know bothered you, but something that bothered me is there's this purple bandmate that has like a orangey Fu Manchu kind of thing.
Yeah.
In the band. I think his name's Pops. I think, but maybe that's wrong. But his eyes, they're not like eyes. They're not like googly eyes. They're like these little like socks on his face. Well, he blinks at one point and it creeped me out to no end. Like it really bothers me. Like I didn't want to see that. And I couldn't unsee it now. Now I have nightmares about little Muppets' eyes winking. It's horrible.
Fair enough. Yeah, I don't know. I did definitely notice that when that happened. I was like, wait, I don't know if I've ever seen that character blink before, but it didn't bother me. Not as much as when Constantine, the Kermit lookalike, is doing kung fu and it's obviously CGI or they're erasing the puppet handler out of the scene so that, I don't know, it just looked weird to me.
And no, I talked about this. That's a carryover problem, I think, because there was a scene where they abduct Jack Black in the first one, and yeah. I felt like that was the same thing. I was like, Chef should not move that way. That's unnatural.
Yeah.
Even though he's always had human hands, which I just recently recognized.
Mm-hmm.
Did you,
I mean, it was a total meta thing, but did you enjoy the chef seven seal joke?
Yes, I did actually.
I laughed out loud in my theater and I was the only one.
Yeah, I think Jackie looked at me when I did it too, and I was the only one. So,
all right. Well, let's move on to our Netflix homework, which I assigned to you yesterday, or last week, as it were. And it is the movie Concussion, which came out last year, actually, fairly new release. And the plot is basically about this middle-aged mother named Abby, played by Robin Weigert, who the first shot we see of the movie, she's just been hit in the head with a baseball by one of her kids on accident. She's bleeding profusely, and she's kind of freaking out and crying, and questioning her, you know, her the trajectory of her whole life. And after she heals and she's, you know, doing her spinning class and that kind of stuff, she's pretty athletic. She tells her wife, who she's raising these kids with, you know, I want to take on this job in the city in New York, and I'm going to be fixing up this loft with this other guy, and I just need to kind of get out and do my own thing for a while. And so she goes to do that, and this guy sort of introduces her to a prostitute. And after she has that encounter, she decides she wants to start taking on clients of her own, sort of outside of her marriage, and sort of leading this double life. It's kind of becomes sort of a character study of this experience and this sort of middle-aged, midlife crisis she's going through.
Yeah, and again, for me, this is just it's well acted.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, to me, the cinematography is a little dull at times. Like there are parts that are better, and there's some good storytelling in here for sure. And overall, it's actually a tight piece of cinema. I find the subject matter really boring and kind of dull.
Mm-hmm.
You can include nudity and sex, and for some reason, it just doesn't grab my attention. And this film specifically, the only stuff that did kind of grab my attention was some of, like, the weird character side stuff that they didn't focus on as much. Like, there was an overweight, client of hers when she was doing this, like, prostitution thing.
Yeah.
That I was kind of into their relationship and what was going on there.
Yeah. That was definitely my favorite stuff in the movie.
Yeah, and
I felt like it, there could have been more of it.
Well, there was also this, like, bizarre, like, she had to kind of deal with this, like, basically a soccer mom from her neighborhood comes, played by Maggie Siff, who's in Sons of Anarchy. She does good stuff.
Yeah.
And I thought she was pretty good in this. And they have this weird kind of cheating, like, it kind of plays up on that whole house mom cheating thing. They just kind of have a twist on it because she's a lesbian, and they do it pretty, like, it's just naturalistic.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think it kind of popped her imagination world bubble, that character, because all of a sudden her worlds are colliding,
mm-hmm.
and it kind of brings her dangerously close to home, and so that character is a really interesting foil for her, because she's, like, you know, She's attracted to her in a way that's less detached mm-hmm. than all of her other clients, which is, you know, very much kind of, I'm trying on this personality. With her, she has to be herself. So that was an interesting corner of the movie. But again, like, I feel like everything in this movie, it doesn't quite get explored enough. It just kind of skims the surface of those ideas.
I think you're right. Basically, to me, this movie just didn't have a lot of gravitas. It just kind of, like, there's nothing that really pulled me in that much. I don't know.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I think
I feel like I'm treading over ground we've already talked about before, though.
Literally, but
oh yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, you know, having an extra day to sit on this movie, there's things about it that I think are commendable. I think it is really well acted. I really like the lead, Robin Weigert. I think she's really good in the movie, and she has kind of this this self-deprecating dry sense of humor that I really dug throughout the whole thing. You know, mm-hmm. she's not like a Red Shoe Diaries type of softcore porn character where she's like, ooh, this, you know, this dark, mysterious world. She kind of looks at it like, what am I doing? Like, I don't know. Like, there's enough kind of self-referentiality to the way she plays it that is really kind of real and empathetic.
Well, that's an interesting angle to kind of go at it that we didn't talk about. Like, honestly, there was kind of this, like, side cast. Like, the guy was okay. He was actually one of the weaker ones, I thought, in it.
Yeah.
But the girl they bring in, like, the blonde who becomes her, like, pimp.
Yeah.
And is in law school, and I was like, this cannot get back to me, and she's kind of snotty. And
she's, like, 21 years old, and...
Yeah, I actually really dug her character because of that kind of... That, I don't know, almost...
I mean, she almost kind of feels like she walked out of a Lena Dunham kind of thing. Like, she feels a lot more like she belongs in Girls than she does in this movie.
Well, she actually walked out of Walking Dead, but, you know.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't know about that. But she has that personality, that kind of, like, rich, spoiled city girl, I'm too busy for everybody kind of thing. And she was a lot of fun.
Yeah, no. It added a nice flavor to it. No, I mean, overall, it was... There were some interesting moments. It had interesting moments because it was well acted, so you kind of... It did give it a little bit more.
Yeah.
But overall... And again, we kind of talk about this with just subject matter. I just find the subject matter kind of to me, there wasn't... I was about as engaged by the plot and what these kind of things happens as I was that... Still can't remember the name of that movie.
The Take This Waltz.
Yeah, the Take This Waltz, the Polly movie.
Sarah Polly.
Sarah Polly, yeah.
Yeah.
It's just, I don't know, to me it's just kind of like, oh, so you had the selfish moment and then you realize that it was bad, even though you already knew it was bad. Oh, okay. Like,
yeah, I feel like the problem with the movie as a whole is there's not a lot of consequences, and I'm not asking for this character to be punished, but I feel like, you know, the setup is like, oh, does she dare? You know, that's, there has this kind of exploitative setup. And then the game it's playing is actually we're going to treat this pretty naturalistic, and that's fine, except for once you get to the third act and you really want the rubber to start hitting the road, it kind of just drifts away. Mm-hmm. And the outcomes are not all that dramatic or cinematic. And I actually kind of like the look of the movie. I think it has a really kind of sparse... minimal look.
I think it does in parts, and in some other parts I just think it doesn't, it just falls flat. So. Yeah.
Well, it is a fairly low-budget movie.
Well, it's not just that. I think it works better when it's inside, like, places than it does when it's outside, and I think you have to shoot a little bit different in both scenarios.
Yeah. Well, in a way, the movie is sort of about interiors.
Yeah.
This loft represents one life, her suburban home kind of represents another. They're lit differently,
right?
Yeah.
Well, there's even this interesting character moment where when her crush comes in, and she the Maggie Siff character, and she like basically says, oh, why didn't you go with this kind of linoleum, and she literally like pulls it off the wall, even though she's an interior decorator and just as smart and just as educated and probably older than her. So there's an interesting moment there. There are some definitely, like I said, there are some great moments in it. But for me, if this isn't the kind of subject matter that usually is something that you have an inclination for, I would just say skip it. Like, personally, like, if you're into kind of like a character piece and you like people, the cheating narrative, then maybe... Some people do, it's their thing, I get it. But to me, there's not a whole lot of difference between this and, like, the early 90s kind of eroticism kind of movies that are kind of like it. It's just, it's just like, okay, cool.
Yeah, yeah.
Happen again. I'm sure, I know it happens, like, all the time, but it's just like, okay, cool.
Yeah.
I've seen it.
Well, and, you know, not that it's the greatest comparison, but in a way... I kind of feel like The Kids Are All Right kind of plays with some of these ideas and does so in a lot more engaging way.
No, I actually had that thought as well. I didn't. I mean, it does it in a little different way because you've got the
Yeah.
weird.
Genre-wise, they're kind of two different things,
Well, not really. Like, I think it does have a similar texture to it, but where this one is like a stereotypical, like she's definitely going to cheat on her wife. This one. The other one, it kind of like does it in a strange way, and it also kind of plays with gender dynamics and sexual orientation and stuff like that. And it does more interesting things.
It just
Like
does more
honestly,
things.
yeah, it's just
Yeah.
better.
Yeah. I kind of like the movie for what it is. I'm not crazy about it. I don't think that it's something to write home about, but I get the appeal. And as a fan of indie film, I kind of like to see, people get out there and get their work done and making personal projects. So I commend it on that, but as a movie, as a dramatic piece of storytelling, I think it kind of lacks.
Okay.
All right, well, if you have anything you want to say about any of the movies we talked about in this episode, your favorite Muppet movies, Concussion if you happen to see it, go ahead and email us at jabberonthedrone@gmail.com. You can also email us with any kind of thoughts or critiques you have of certain episodes. If you want to follow us on Facebook, you can at facebook.com/jabberpodcast. You can find us on iTunes, and while you're there, please write us a review. Helps people notice us, apparently. You can subscribe to us on iTunes and Stitcher Radio and Pocket Casts and listen to us on your favorite mobile device. You can find our regular archives and our RSS feed at jabberinthedrone.podbean.com. You can read my weekly movie reviews that I do for the Idaho State Journal at saladforkreviews.blogspot.com. You can read my content that I provide for the Seattle-based website MacGuffin at macguff.in/author/Cassidy. You can read Richard's new writings that he's doing for his blog, rdwally.weebly.com. Wally spelled like yellow backwards.
Very good, very good.
Yes. And be sure to check out episode 2 of Quarter Life Crisis podcast at quartercrisis.podbean.com. Brad and Amanda are kind of on a roll. They're sticking to it. They already got followers, which makes me mad. So do that.
We made a baby.
I made a baby. All right. We'll talk to you next week.
Okay, bye.
Bye.